BlackScholarsPublishing.com.
That we should get our own. Once we have our own, we're respected for the fact that we can create our own. And that's equality right there.
Living. Start a record label, Miss Fish just did it. Nylon, cover 5 minutes. Whoa, we are too hot in the business. About to make a movie independent.
Welcome back to the Black Scholars Podcast, a community for black educators. Again, I'm your host, Leonard Andre Wilson Jr. I'm glad to have you guys. Follow me on Instagram at the Black Scholars Podcast. Again, follow me on Instagram at the Black Scholars Podcast. I've also opened a Facebook group, which you can just simply type in the Black Scholars Podcast on Facebook. I actually think it's facebook.com/ the Black Scholars Podcast. That should take you right there. Go ahead and join. Theme of the show, Black Scholars Podcast is indeed a community for black educators. It's about going from good to great. It's about representing and exuberating black excellence and expecting the best for all kids, regardless of race, regardless of origin, regardless of creed. If we stick together and collaborate, imagine what we could possibly be. Sponsor for today's show, I want to welcome a new sponsor called Edge Entity. If you are on Instagram and let's say you pay attention to Baller Alert or the Shade Room, you might see some advertisement from Edge Entity. And actually, I spoke with the owner of Edge Entity, and we have a special code. The code is Black Scholars. One word, Black Scholars. That'll actually get you 20% off. There's also going to be a future announcement from Edge Entity that I'll share with you guys that will help you if you are looking at adding entrepreneurship to your resume. I know a lot of educators, including myself, dibble and dabble in business outside of the classroom. And so if that's you, I got something special coming for you guys. Again, that code is Black Scholars. No space. Topic for today's show, it's the importance of knowing your kids. Again, the importance of knowing your kids. How well, as an educator, do you really know your kids? You've got to be honest with yourself. I got switched over from teaching Read and Language Arts in Rich to this year teaching Standard Read and Language Arts, as well as a social studies class. Didn't really enjoy that. Thankfully, I was able to switch to a new position where I was working with gifted kids, which means a lot to me since I grew up as a gifted kid. Well, I got switched over in December. The school year is out. I know all of my kids' names. I know my kids very, very well. I've got a good relationship with them, but I've got one kid. I keep mispronouncing her name. I can't. It's something in my head. It's something mental. She's a great student, thankfully. But most kids, they probably feel a certain type of way about that. And not to say that this particular kid doesn't. But I promise I'm working on it over the summer. I don't know what it is. I think it's a mental thing, like LeBron when he was with the Miami Heat, or Shaq when he was shooting free throws. It's something mental, right? Because I have all the fundamentals. I say it phonically as correct as I can, and it still comes out wrong. I'm working on it, guys. On this episode, I speak to fourth grade educator Sierra Broadway. Sierra's from Atlanta, Georgia. She teaches at a different type of school. I think it's a charter school, but we'll hear from her on this topic of the importance of knowing your kids. Enjoy the interview.
It's a major move right here, baby. You gotta get with it or get lost. You understand?
Yeah. This young lord reporting live from Atlanta, Georgia. Decatur wears great. And I want all my sexy ladies to report to the dance floor immediately. We gon' golden glide this one, y'all. Be greased.
Yeah. Right off the back, man, the boy got dollars. So women come frequent like flight miles.
So, Sierra, what grade and subject do you currently teach?
So I teach fourth grade reading, writing, social studies in the city of Atlanta.
Are you in Atlanta public schools?
Well, I actually work for a charter school network called Kindezi. You might have heard about them.
Okay.
With all the fiasco with the Black History performance, but I don't work at that school. There's three schools in the network. I actually work at the school at Gideon's. This is the first year that Kindezi has taken over, but we have a partnership with Atlanta Public School System. So it's called like a turnaround school. So okay. Since the school has had a history of having like, you know, bad attendance, bad test scores, bad behavior, you know, we had a partnership and we're like, well, it seems like you guys know what you're doing with these other two schools because of the test scores and, you know, the success that they've had with the Kindezi network. So they're like, you know, come in, take over and we'll see what you can do. And it's actually been a successful year. The kids made so much progress. I'm so proud of them.
How long have you been at that school specifically?
This is my first year. And this is the very first year of this school has been open, my school, in the Kindezi network. Okay. So all of the teachers there were brand new this whole first year. It's just like a trial, kind of. But we did something right. We did.
Nice. So before then, where were you?
I actually took 2 years off to go back to school. I was getting my master's. I actually still have two classes left until I'm done with that. But I was teaching my first 2 years in Maryland, in Prince George's County.
So nice.
That's where I first began my teaching career.
Are you from Maryland or where are you from?
No, I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
I graduated from Carlow University. It's a private college right there on like Pitt's campus.
Okay. Yep.
So I actually had graduated and then I went to a job fair out there in Pittsburgh. And my best friend and I, we got a job on the spot. And we both moved to Maryland together, and that's where I started my first 2 years.
Okay, and why Maryland, of all places?
It wasn't too far from home.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked the D.C., Maryland, you know, DMV area. I still do like it. It's just really expensive to live there.
Yeah, Prince George's County. Let me see. I came in through, you heard of the New Teacher Project before?
Yes.
So I came in through the teaching fellows and I was looking for, at several different cities and Prince George's County was one of them. And I had a friend who's from the DC area or DMV area. And she was telling me, she's like, it's so expensive up there. Don't do it. Like, don't do it. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do it. So
that was like 25 minutes from DC.
Okay.
And I'm like, the closer you get to the actual city, the more expensive it is too.
So your first 2 years, did you teach fourth grade?
I did. I've only taught fourth grade my whole teaching career so far. Same subject, same grade.
Dope. So what was the motivation for getting into education?
When I first went to college, I wasn't going to school to be a teacher. My major was physical therapy. And it really wasn't something I wanted to do. I actually didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I looked into that and my parents were like, you know, that's a good job to get. You'll get a job and it's great pay. So I was like, all right. So I did my first 2 years and then I started taking all the science courses and I was like, I'm just not interested in this. And, you know, I couldn't put forth my best effort in the classes because I just didn't do anything for me. Right. And actually, while I was in school, I was working at a daycare center, which I had to work with the after school program with the kids. So they were school age kids. And I really loved it. I've always worked well with kids. I've always had a good bond with children. Like everywhere I go, like children are just like drawn to me for some reason. I don't know what it is, but I'm also the oldest in my family. My grandmother has like 20 grandkids and I'm the oldest. So I've always been like the leader and, you know, help babysit and take care of kids. So it's just a natural thing for me to be a leader and to teach kids. So I was like, you know what, I might as well just be a teacher. And so, and then my best friend who was in college with me, she was going to school to be a teacher too. So I was like, you know what, I might as well just do that too. So I did. And that's where I'm at now.
Is she still teaching, your friend?
Yeah, she does. She actually still lives in Maryland. She stayed. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And so what was your first major?
Physical therapy.
Okay. And you said you didn't enjoy it?
No.
Okay.
I didn't. And actually in high school, I did a program which was called the Scholar Mentor Program, where I would go into the elementary school and like mentor a child. And I think that's actually where I first started to like fall in love with working with kids. But I didn't really know it until I got to my second year of college.
When you did your student teaching, was that in fourth grade as well?
The first, because you had to do two different grades.
Okay.
So the first 8 weeks of the semester was with first grade. And then the last one was with the fourth graders. And I knew like I wanted to teach fourth grade after that experience, because it was in the city of Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh Public School District. So kind of the same type of kids I'm working with now. And I really enjoyed it. Teachers tried to discourage me from even being a teacher then.
Seriously?
Yeah, she my first experience with the first graders, he was an awesome mentor and teacher. Mm-hmm. He was about to retire that year, actually, but he still had so much love for what he was doing. And I could tell, and it showed in everything that he was doing and how he was trying to help me. Then when I went to the fourth grade classroom, the teacher was just like, she was this white woman who was just like maybe in her 40s. Divorced, and she was just over it, and you could tell. And she was like, are you sure you want to do this? And you could tell just the way that she managed her classroom that she just didn't care anymore. Even to the point where she was doing like a vocabulary lesson on the carpet, and the kids were just like touching each other, not even paying attention at all. And I'm like, afterwards, I'm like, why don't we try to give them assigned seats on the carpet? Why don't we try that?
Right.
So we tried it, and it worked out a lot better than what she was doing. Like, you didn't think of that, or you just didn't care?
She didn't care. That's a good experience, though. Like, even, and it's good that you had a good example to look at and experience, and also a bad experience to look at and say, okay, this is what not to do when I get my own classroom. So that's dope. So technically, would you have just finished number three as far as teaching?
Yep, this is my third year.
Okay. Okay, awesome. And what's the master's degree? Is it master's in teaching or master's of ed?
Nope, I actually was going a different route. I was going into a master's of public administration and nonprofit management.
Okay.
Kind of later on in life, I would like to start my own type of educational program. Not a school necessarily, but something in the inner city for the type of children I'm working with. Like teaching them their real history, teaching them life skills, you know, social, emotional skills, things like that.
Dope. Yeah, we got similar goals, but except mine, I do actually want a school. And I don't charter school. I actually think I'm thinking about a Montessori school. I've been doing a lot of research on Montessori schools. So I think that might be a good fit for me personally. But anyways.
With the same type of children, right?
Yeah, same type of kids. For me, well, I did teach high school, but since I've been in middle school, and this has been 5 years now, I've only had 7 graders. This past year, they put me in the intellectually gifted class. So I've got one group of 6th graders, one group of 7th graders, and one group of 8th graders. So that's 6 through 8 range. That's like the perfect range for me, because those kids are still knuckleheads, but they're still respectful. And as long as they know that you care, they will do what you ask them to do. So I'm good with that.
Yeah, I can't do the middle school. I did some substituting in Pittsburgh in middle school, and I was like,
Yeah, they're rough. They're a rough group, but once you get used to them, because trust me, it was a huge transition that I had to personally and professionally make from high school down to middle school. Because high school, you know, you can say whatever to high schoolers, like, they think they're grown anyway. So, you know, you can say whatever, but with like middle school, they think they're grown, but at the same time, they still have like those kid-like ways. And so you can be joking with them and you can accidentally hurt their feelings for real.
Right.
You can't hurt a high schooler's feelings. Like right. They're just invincible. But anyways, cool. So in our dialogue, when we were talking and we were trying to figure out like, what is our episode going to be about? I asked you a few questions and pretty much we kind of decided that we're going to focus on the importance of how you or why you need to know your students, why that's so important, why you need to know your kids. So let me ask you, why do you think it's important to know your students for an educator?
Because in order to even reach them academically and get them to learn what you need them to learn or behave how you want them to behave, you need to know who this child is as a person, not just a student, just like as a person. First and foremost, you need to learn like what makes them tick, what are they interested in, so that you can kind of, you know, plan your instruction and even how you interact with them around that. Because this child might need a certain type of discipline that this other kid, you know, can't handle. And you have to know those different things. Like, for example, I have a student who was considered the worst student in the school. Like the file on her was this long and like talking about throwing shoes at teachers, breaking windows. We didn't have any of those problems this year with her. I mean, she had her days, you know, but to that extent, it was nothing like that because of the relationship that I built with her before school even started. So at our school, it was actually mandatory and encouraged for us to make home visits and like go and meet the children and the parents and go into the community before school even started. And so dealing with her in certain ways where I had to talk to her a certain way, but then another student who was just very, very sensitive. Like if I raise my voice even a little bit, he's crying. Like, so I had to figure out those things in the very beginning, you know, what's a good way for me to discipline this child that is not going to embarrass him. So I figured that out. Like, okay, this child needs to be taken out of the classroom and talked to, you know, in a nice calm voice to figure out what's going on. So yeah, definitely you need to know who your students are before you can even think about trying to teach them how to read and write and act how you want them to act.
So on the first day of school, let's pretend it's the first day of school. How do you like establish that? Like, how do you really start off like the beginning of building that culture of I have a good relationship with my kids? Like, what do you do?
Well, it was different this year at this school because, like I said, it was mandatory for us to make those home visits. So when they came to school, most of those kids, I already knew them. I already met them twice because we also had like a family fun night before school started where they came in and we got to meet our students. So we already were off to a good start because we already knew them. I already remembered their names. And that's an important thing, too, for teachers to remember.
That's huge.
Quickly, like, I'm not talking about taking some of the teachers were still in like the next month of school and they're like, I still don't know her name. I'm like, how do you not know her name?
Yeah, that's me. That's me. That's me. It takes me a minute. Yeah.
I make sure I learn them the very first day of school. And I'm like, I'll keep going over. I'm saying, your name is Megan. Your name is Claude. You know, I'll just keep going. And then if I get it wrong, they'll correct me. But then by the next day of school, like I know all their names or I try to remember something about them, like their physical appearance or how they act to match with their name. But I always just make sure I remember that first day because I do realize that when a teacher does not remember the student's name, like it makes them feel some type of way. Like it
does.
Like, well, hey, like I'm your student. You still don't know my name. So that's important for me. That's a strategy I use to like to build a relationship with them and also do little activities to figure out like what they like to do. What do they do in their free time? What type of things make them upset? And it's kind of hard with fourth graders because sometimes they don't even know like those things. They don't know a deeper understanding of like what makes me upset. They might say somebody hits me. Like, okay, anybody would be mad if somebody hits you, but right. Like you really don't learn those deeper things until later on in the school year when you get to know the kid. But those things do help in the beginning.
Do you use any specific type of icebreakers like on the first day or first week to get the kids to even know each other?
We play a lot of games. We do a lot of like community building and teamwork. activities and things like that. And another thing about my school is I have a partner teacher. Okay. So every classroom has two teachers. We both teach at the same time. And the only thing that's divided in the classroom is our bookshelves. So okay. I'm teaching about 7 kids at one time, reading and writing and social studies. And on the other side of the room is the math and science teacher teaching his stuff. So it also helps to have a good relationship with that teacher, too. And we work really well together this year, and we're actually working together again next year. But, yeah, so we do a lot of, like, team-building activities, and it also helps for them to get to know me. So on the first day of school, I always show them this PowerPoint I created, like, about my life. So I tell them where I'm from. I tell them where I went to college. I tell them about my daughter. I show them a picture of me when I was in fourth grade so they can see what I looked like and like what, and I tell them what type of student I was when I was in fourth grade. And, you know, it just helps get them interested in who I am as a person. And then I also turn the question in on them. So like, tell the person next to you something about you that you did over the summer or, you know, little fun things like that, just so we can get to know each other.
So on average, how long does it take, you to like really know all of the kids like comfortably well?
Maybe like the first month of school.
Okay, that's fair.
But yeah. It's hard to because they're so transient. Like they come in and they leave. There's always new students. There's always leaving. So it's really hard to build those relationships, you know, firm relationships in the very beginning because you don't know who's going to stay and who's going to go, who's coming. But I will say the ones that have stayed the whole year or came like a little bit later and stayed the rest of the year, like they're like my kids. Like we're like a little family in that classroom. So I also do things like lunch bunch. So I'll set up criteria where you have to meet this criteria in order to get a lunch bunch with me. And you would think kids were like, I don't want to eat lunch with the teacher, but they wanted to eat lunch with me. Sometimes I'll buy them pizza or I'll play music. Or I like watch a movie, but they wanted to do that. And it was also encouragement and incentive for them to do what I needed them to do academically and behaviorally. So, and it was also a time for us to bond and I would talk to them about, you know, what's going on at home and things like that. So that's another strategy I used to get to know those kids.
And what do you call it? Lunch brunch or lunch bunch?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, lunch bunch.
So what does that criteria look like? Is it academic or behavior wise or
it's both?
Okay.
So you have to have turned in all your homework for the week. You have to have, you know, got an A on your exit tickets all week. Behavior wise, we have a program we use called Kickboard where you get like points added or points deducted depending upon like your behavior and like, you know, wearing your uniform, things like that. And so if you get a certain amount of those points, then you can come to the lunch bunch too. So I tried to make it a little bit hard so that I didn't have everybody up there.
Right.
But dealing with the type of kids that I have who have behavior challenges, it wasn't that easy for all of them to make it. So it was a little challenging, but it definitely was a great incentive for them to act right.
And you said it's called Kickboard?
Yeah, Kickboard.
Okay. Is that like an app or some type of software or?
Yep. It's a website. You can do it on the website and there's also an app.
Is it similar to Class Dojo? Are you familiar with?
Kind of.
Because it's just easy to track and. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I like Class Dojo. I've been using Class Dojo for forever. Like literally, I was teaching high school using Class Dojo.
Yeah. I use that at my other school too.
Okay. Kickboard. I'm going to have to check it out. Dope. So, what other strategies would you recommend to other educators as far as getting to know your kids? So we know why it's important. You know, it's going to help academic performance. It's going to help with behavior. Have you teach in fourth grade? I'm interested to know. Have you ever gotten in a power struggle with a kid? Maybe like your first year?
My first year teaching?
Yeah.
No, okay. I didn't. Because I worked with a different type of kids. When I was teaching in Maryland, it was at a school that had a partnership with a refugee program. So most of the kids were from different countries. They weren't, you know, English wasn't their first language. And a majority of them were from Spanish-speaking countries.
Okay.
And, you know, they have a different type of culture, a different upbringing. Their parents have a different respect for education. So sure. I didn't really have too many behavior issues in my classroom at all. It was really just academic struggles. But, yeah, not my first year teaching. This was probably the most challenging school year for me at the school that I'm at now, where I did have a power struggle with a few students, but.
And was that power struggle or power struggles that occurred like in the beginning of the year? And then as they got to know you even more and you got to know them, it kind of died down as the year continued?
I mean, it was throughout the whole entire year. I'm not even going to lie. Okay. But it got a lot better. I will say that. It got a lot better once we built a relationship. So not only with the child, but with the family members too and the community as a whole.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. Because the basis of Kandezi is based off of a book, actually. That's where they got the name for the school. And I forget the name of the author, but I can tell you at a later time. But it's about how in Africa, the children are the center of everything and how it takes the whole village and the community as a whole to build this, like, beloved community of children and people in society who are, you know, successful and happy and also contributing something positive to the society. And that's kind of what the basis is of our school. It has a very strong focus on building the culture of the classroom and the community. Right. So they try to do everything. Everything is just centered around that. So, you know, meeting with family members and community members who are in, you know, the surrounding neighborhood, making sure we have all type of events where family members feel like they are part of the school and making it feel like a family. And that even goes to the teachers.
Right.
Like it was the most challenging, but it was the best teaching experience ever, not even just as a teacher, but also just as an employee at my school, because the teachers are really appreciated. I've never felt that in my other school.
That's good. That's really good. So what other strategies would you recommend for educators as far as getting to know their kids?
Just definitely making those home visits. I know some schools don't really allow that, but maybe making a case that it's good for the children, it's the best for the kids to make those home visits. Not like popping up, but like going and being able to sit and go into the neighborhood and meet the parents and the family members who live with the child. Having those lunch bunches, having those set aside times for certain kids or a little group at a time where you can sit and talk to them and, you know, just find out where their mind is at and getting to know them, what do they like to do, things like that. Letting them know who you are.
Right.
You know, and I always tell my students, like, you don't have to respect me just because I'm a teacher, but you're going to respect me because I respect you as a person. We're both people. You know, I'm not just your teacher, but I can also be your friend. I don't have to be your friend, but I can be, you know.
Right, right.
So just letting them know who I am, too, and giving them bits and pieces of my own life. It makes them feel more connected to me. And so, like, I bring my daughter around a lot because she actually goes to the school, too.
Okay.
So they have a great relationship. And just, like, telling them bits and pieces of my life, you know, not too much, but, you know, just enough where they know, like, who Ms. Broadway is, too, as a person.
Yeah, they get the opportunity to see that you're actually a human.
Right.
Because usually when I run into kids outside of school, they're like, oh my God, you go to the mall? You shop?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You go to the grocery store? You eat? Oh my God, I didn't know that. Like, yeah, I do. That's super dope. And that is an excellent idea and strategy to do the home visits. I do think that there are a lot of specifically public districts that probably do forbid or have something about going to, you know, do the home visits. But if there is flexibility, that sounds like a really good recommendation, because then you even get to see, like, you know, the organization and structure of the home. Like, is dad there? Is mom there? Or is it grandma raising them? How many siblings are there? Because I'm not sure what I read, but it said something like, you know, specifically in secondary grades, you know, middle and high school, kids come to school and they're told to sit down, don't chew gum, don't drink anything, right. Listen, pay attention, participate, answer these questions, write this, read this. Mm-hmm. And it's just demand, demand, demand. And they have to follow and listen and be submissive to us because we're the adult and it's our classroom, mm-hmm. versus they come from different situations at home where, what if little Johnny is big brother and he's got two siblings and mom's working three jobs to make ends meet. And right. so when he's at home, he's kind of like the man of the house, right? Because right. he's making the macaroni and cheese and checking the baby's bottle right. and doing all this stuff. And so when they, you know, come to either your class or my class and it's like, hey, sit down. This is how we do things. These are the right. rules. And he's looking like, who are you? Like,
right,
you
right.
know, so I think that's important.
It would be a great opportunity to make that home visit and find that out so that you could use that in your, at, you know, to help your instruction. So maybe you need to make him a leader in the classroom, you know,
exactly.
make him the leader and give him jobs to make him feel like he is important and he's still, you know, not being so submissive to where he has to listen to everything you're doing, but still make him feel important. And that, I think that would be helpful with, you know, even managing other kids in the classroom too.
Definitely, definitely. Some of my, well, I don't really have that many bad kids anymore, but some of the kids that teachers ran from before I got switched over to the gifted program, I did well with those kids. And, you know, all of my coworkers there, my colleagues, their excuse was, well, you're a man, so they're going to treat you different, which there is some truth to that,
yeah,
especially sure. if there's not a dad in the home. Right.
Yeah.
But I just think it's a different way of just managing a classroom. And it's like, if I have a kid that all of the other teachers are like, no, I don't want them in my class, and they send them to me, I can handle them because, one, I'm respectful when I speak with them. I don't call them out of their name. I don't embarrass them. I don't get into power struggles. The rules are what they are. But I also empathize with them if they got, you know, certain situations. So you might not have turned in your homework, but I'm able to know that because I'm going to have a one-on-one conversation with you. I try to have as many one-on-one conversations with kids as possible. I know that's hard to do in a school day, especially when, you know,
a regular size classroom.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I try my best. I try my best, even if it's like something after school, like at a basketball game or a soccer game or just a, you know, tutoring. I see kids walking around. I just have real conversations with them.
Yeah.
And I think that's important as well, too. I know what I want to ask you. With all of the data that you actually collect, do you have like a folder or like a notebook that you keep all of that information in, you can access?
Yeah, like throughout the school year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually give each student their own like data folder.
Okay.
And I even give them, you know, a role in tracking their progress. So I have a graph where they get to shade in, you know, what their score was at the beginning or in the middle and the end and things like that. And they even make their own goals and then write about, like, did I reach my goal? Or if I didn't, what can I do better next time?
Yeah.
So giving them, like, a role in, you know, their academic success and is beneficial as well.
Yeah.
They know, 'cause sometimes they don't even know what the end goal is. They just know, right. like, I want to pass.
Right.
A lot of them say that. I just want to go to fifth grade. Well, how are you going to get there? Like, what right. do you need to do to get there? So
right.
helping them, like, consciously think of those things is beneficial as well.
Yeah, so goal setting is really, really important. I think we've only done it once a year, but I think we want to do it more at my school, where we have what they call student data night, where the kids have to actually know their own data and they present it to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the next step. Yeah, it gets the parents involved. Usually we like serve them dinner. They come out, they get to eat for free. And it's just exhilarating and insightful to see kids take control of like what they did right, what they did wrong, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. Because we're smarter than we give them credit for. I mean, they're smarter than we actually give them credit for a lot
right.
of the time. And, you know, I think we kind of hold their hand. Like, we know their data because we have to know it as their teacher. But do they know it? And do their parents know it? Because a lot of parents, they just, the only thing they think about is the report card, right? So they miss everything in between unless it's a serious issue and we're contacting them. So I think that's a step that hopefully everyone gets to, is where all kids have that. Those data notebooks,
and how to do better too when they know what their goal is.
Definitely,
because I actually figured that out. We do it at the beginning, middle, and end. So they take three like assessments throughout the year that we focus on for growth. So we set their goal in the beginning, then we check on it again in the middle, and then they make a new goal, and then at the end. So in the beginning, I didn't do that.
Okay,
I was just like, this is your score.
Right,
but then
right.
The next time around, I was like, okay, this was your score. Here's your goal. What are you going to do to try to meet that goal? What are some things you can do in the classroom? They came up with their own answers. And like, okay, we're going to check in with you again to see if you're doing those things. And so then, like, it came to the point where it really pushed them. They're like, am I going to meet my goal? Like, what else can I do? And then when they finally took the last test, it was like, I met my goal. They were so happy about it. And I could see more of a push and more of a motivation for them than I did at the beginning of the year because I did that.
That's dope. That's super, super dope. The one thing I want to add to the data notebooks is I think I want to add, like, something more so on, like metacognition, like, do kids know how they actually learn best? Like, I want that to be a part of it. Like, all of the information we get from, like, student surveys, you know, their birthdays, video games they like playing, you know, magazines, books, movies. Like, I want to put all of that information in their actual student data notebook because I think that would be, like, beneficial even for lesson planning and differentiation. Because, you know, I might be able to incorporate, like, some of that, you know, like, a lot of the kids went crazy when Black Panther came out. You know, that was huge for them. All across the country, you kind of seen that. And so I really wanted to, like, incorporate, like, the comic books, but I didn't have any of the comic books.
Right.
So I think moving forward, like, next year, that's something over the summer that's on my to-do list. It's like, let me get some actual comics in here that the kids are genuinely interested in. And just, you know, overall, guys, most of the guys like sports, get some more sports books in there.
Right.
Just really try to cater to, you know, like you said, who they actually are. So that's my plan.
That's a good plan.
All right.
Those
so great strategies we shared for educators. Last question I want to ask you. As a Black scholar yourself, what do you think we need to improve the profession for Black educators?
First and foremost, more Black educators.
definitely.
More, especially Black men who are educators
yep.
in classrooms. Because definitely, like you were saying earlier, there is a little bit of a benefit for you all as far as how the kids respond to you. And I've seen that this year because my partner teacher is a male. He's a Black male. He's a little older. I think the age matters too.
Definitely.
It shouldn't, but it does. It really makes a difference because I've seen how the kids responded to him as opposed to another male teacher who was like my age. So I think definitely first and foremost, more Black teachers working with Black children.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just relate differently than, you know, a white teacher and the Black students. Like, it's sad that it has to be that way, but it is relevant. It's very relevant to today's time. It's very relevant to how these children can relate to you and how they look at you. At the beginning of the year, the students, you know, right now where we teach and where the kids live, gentrification is going on. So, right in front of our faces. Like, our school is here across the street. They're rebuilding these houses.
Wow.
And families are getting moved out. And so there's a lot of animosity and a lot of anxiety towards white folks in that neighborhood. And so, you know, the kids feel all that and they hear all that and they, you know, process it in their own way. So, like, I remember the beginning of the year, some of the students that I had actually were like, I'm not listening to that white woman, that white lady, you know, just things like that, that, you know, they can't relate. They can't relate to the things that they're going on in their home or what's going on with their lives. You know, white teachers have probably never had to deal with being kicked out of their home because somebody's buying it out and raising the rent. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Not to say nobody ever has, but it's more of a chance than not. Like, But yeah, definitely more black teachers teaching black kids, and just also making, maybe not just specifically for black teachers, but educators as a whole, making them feel appreciated for all the work that we do. That is so important, because like I was saying, this year, even though it was challenging as a teacher, like being a teacher and an employee with this network and with our principal, it was the best experience, because they really strive to make us all feel like a family, the teachers, the students, the community. And just by doing little things, like for Teacher Appreciation Week, we have got breakfast, lunch, we got massages. You know, they give us T-shirts.
That's dope.
We get a day off where, like, one partner teacher has to stay and the other one gets the day off. And then they switch, you know, just to get a day to, like, you know, relax. Just other little things that they do that really show they care. And, you know, if they hear things that we don't like, you know, they want that feedback. And then they actually make those changes to the best of their ability to please us and to make it better for us. So that's never happened for me in other schools. So I think that's really important too, making the teachers feel appreciated for what they do.
My first period on Monday, I'm done for the rest of the week. Teaching them made me mean. I don't even let people over in traffic no more. Today is the day of mm-mm. Mr. Brown, can I borrow your pills to shop? Mm-mm. Mr. Brown, you getting lunch today? Mm-mm. Before my kids ask me a question, mm-mm. Mr. Brown, you know we got a meeting today? Mm-mm. No, y'all got a meeting today. I got a doctor's appointment all of a sudden. Well, I just pulled up to work. Lord, how much longer? I don't even bother.
So, is there a certain quote that you'd like to leave other teachers listening to this with that maybe you live by or reference frequently?
Yeah, my favorite quote of all time is by the Angela Davis, you know, previously Black Panther. She said, "I'm no longer accepting the things I cannot change. I'm changing the things I cannot accept." And that's kind of like what I like to live by. There's something that I just cannot accept or I'm not happy with. I'm going to try to work to change that. And I tell my students that all the time. And I even like incorporated it in my class. We had to talk to them about, like, you know, civil rights movements and things like that. And I actually got to meet Kathleen Cleaver at the airport. Wow. And I showed them, I took a picture with her. I showed the picture and they knew who she was when I said, "I met Kathleen Cleaver," because we talked about it. So it was just a really dope experience to share with my kids too. So
definitely. Yeah. And is there any particular book or something that you would recommend for teachers as well?
Yeah, there's two of them. There's one that's called Relationships Make the Difference, Connect with Your Students and Help Them Build Social, Emotional, and Academic Skills. And that's by Pat Trottier.
Okay.
And it's called, this is about developing like social emotional skills and why it's important for, you know, academic achievement. So building that relationship and helping the children learn how to deal with, you know, social issues and deal with their emotions. And in order to do that, you have to build that relationship, so that you can actually teach them, so they can learn. There's another book also called Developing Positive Self-Images and Discipline in Black Children. And it just talks about how, you know, you have to consider the home life of the child and how the parent is supposed to be the primary educator. But we know in these neighborhoods, oftentimes that's not the case.
Right.
So just helping to build a relationship with the child so that you can build their self-image and their self-awareness so that you can learn how to manage their behaviors and actually the end goal to teach them. So.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Super dope recommendations and quotes.
And that book is by, the second one is by Jawanza Kunjufu.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dope. Any last words for the Black scholars out there?
Just keep putting in the work, because our kids need it. They really do. Our babies need us. They are the future. And that's not a cliche quote. It's the truth, the honest truth.
Yeah, and they need us now more than ever, how things are currently situated. But
yes,
definitely. Well, dope episode. I appreciate you for joining me. And definitely, I need you to come back.
For sure.
We'll definitely start.
Born in school year, I have so many stories.
Oh, yeah, of course. We both will.
What can I say? Mamba out.
Mamba out. I hope you guys enjoyed episode 2. Shout out to Sierra Broadway again, fourth grade teacher in Atlanta. I enjoyed this episode. I hope you guys did as well. Show notes. You can find this show, the Black Scholars Podcast, on Stitcher. It's also coming to iTunes and Google Play as soon as they stop taking forever and approve it. Hopefully iTunes will be updated soon. Also follow this podcast on Instagram at the Black Scholar Podcast. Facebook, the Facebook group is live, facebook.com/ the Black Scholars Podcast. Feel free to send an email if you have any questions or suggestions, or if you want to be on the show. You can contact me at theblackscholarspodcast@gmail.com. I thank you for your support. I thank you for listening. Shout out to all of my Black scholars. Hope you guys are resting peacefully as the summer vacation begins.
Thank you for listening to the Black Scholars Podcast. For more information, sometimes go to blackscholarspublishing.com.
You just gotta.
If you never try, you will never see. Stayed in Africa, we ain't never leave. So one no slaves in our history, one no slave ships.